You know who this is. Welcome to the Pure Individual Podcast.
On this episode, I'm welcoming back Dr. Lilith Butler. Welcome back, Lilith. It's good to have you.
It's so good to be back.
I would definitely like to expand on some of what we went over on our last episode. And also go over anything that comes up for you relating to being emotional, being an emotional projector, your mother to a non-sacral emotional child. I think that there's a lot of areas that we can go into when it comes to the emotional system that are going to be more broad than maybe when it's just like, you know, me as a yang male, you know. I'm very fixed and pretty limited, and it's pretty limited, whereas you have life experience that is very different from mine. Think is going to be immensely beneficial to conversation of the emotional system and being non-sacral and emotional.
Yeah, I'm happy to dive into it. A lot of data points to touch on for sure.
How do you see your stream of feeling show up in regards to entering into relationship dynamics? Your fuel is different from my fuel.
Gosh. It's extremely prominent, as you can imagine, but that like hope disappointment thing, like I really catch myself in that, especially with like the channel that I have. I can find myself kind of like fantasizing and dreaming up like what this relationship could be. And in the past, I used to kind of take that as more like realistic possibility. And now I notice it and I'm like, cool, do your thing, fantasize all you want, but just like really, you know, practice coming back into the present and allowing myself to show up and let things unfold however they might be wanting to naturally, without creating, without allowing the fantasy and the hope to turn into expectation. And if I'm not mindful or careful or aware that that can happen, then it, you know, it has the possibility of turning into expectation, which then leads to disappointment, which still can happen from time to time, but I've gotten so much better at just observing and allowing myself to just, you know, kind of like feel into the whole process, rather than attaching to whatever those hopes, ideals or fantasies might bring up for me.
Totally. Yeah. And that's something that's really, I mean, and for you too, with your configuration, I mean, you have the stream of taste that's mirroring as well with the channel of judgment. So you have that coupled, you know, you have the, it's interesting because you have logical expectations on one side and then you have abstract expectations on the other side. And so that is a lot of potential disappointment to manage.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, throughout my life and in the past specifically, like I've definitely found myself feeling so much disappointment. Because, yeah, just like really attaching to those expectations. But yeah, I've just gotten a lot softer with it and a lot better with just like allowing them to kind of be, but not attaching to them in the way that I used to.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And it's heavy. I've seen you in collective disappointment.
Kombucha.
Yeah, with kombucha. Thankfully, it was nothing super large, but I've seen it. It's definitely something that's it must not be a very pleasant experience at all.
No, it's certainly not. And yeah, I mean, I guess another thing, like with my configuration too, it is like very tied up in like hope of experiencing like a particular kind of experience, right? And I think the place where I still get the most tripped up with it is around food. Actually, like I think less so with relationship at this point, because I've bring a lot of like awareness to that and conscious effort into like really working with that, but like food still gets me really hard.
Why do you think that I always choose really nice restaurants when I go places with you?
Oh, we have, yeah, we've
There's
had.
some reasoning behind it.
I appreciate your consideration with that, like very, very much.
Taste person, yeah, you have to really like it. That's the other thing is like, yeah, maybe it's collective disappointment, but at the same time you're open taste,
Yeah, that's true.
like
Yeah.
time not it's an okay thing to have those expectations on.
Yeah, which is also something I've had to like learn to bring back in to my life, like because part of the deconditioning was to like really let go of expectations, and then it's been kind of like, okay, no, it's okay to have I guess what I would call it more so is like standards, like standards for certain things. And it's also okay if people don't meet them, but that just, or experiences don't meet them or something like that. But that just means it's not for me, instead of like falling into like the disappointment because like that one particular thing didn't work out. And it's like, okay, now I just know that that thing is not for me.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So it's such an important part of being emotional as a whole is just knowing whether, well, it's not knowing whether or not, but it's understanding that what doesn't happen isn't supposed to happen, and what does is supposed to. And
Yeah.
going with that is a very it's an understanding that for the emotional being is really important. And it's so different when you don't have a sacral response, right? Like sacral response as an emotional projector, that's the thing, is that it the strat the overall the projector strategy is not a moment to moment strategy in the first place. And if you add in an authority that takes time to get everything, and it is going to make decisions based off of more than just that moment, then it's a long process.
Yeah.
Like it's a long process, and the better that one gets at being okay with, oh, that didn't happen, and something else is going to happen, a lot better off that we are.
Yeah, which still takes like reminding, like, and really like a lot of trust, and I would even say faith in, just the process of life and your configuration and geometry and all of that, because sometimes invitations come along that are really exciting and you really want it to happen, you know? And based off of either the time that it takes you to really like process and make that decision, or I don't know, like just like continuing on and that opportunity kind of like passing by, it definitely has the potential to be very disappointing. But yeah, just like reminding myself constantly, like, okay, if it didn't happen, it just means that it wasn't meant for me at this point in time, at the very least. And there's something that will be better, more aligned, or or it'll come back around in a time that is actually right. Because sometimes it happens like that. Like you might think that an opportunity is just like completely gone, and then it circles back around, and you're like, oh shit, there it is. And it's like at the time that you're actually able to give your energy to it, whereas before, not so much, you know?
Yeah, totally. The level of bandwidth that you have at one moment in time is very different from the level of bandwidth that you have at a moment in time.
Yeah.
And sometimes things will show up when you don't have the bandwidth for them. And it's always interesting to me to see which things show up when I don't have the bandwidth for them, and then but it still ends up happening when I have the bandwidth for it, because that's the whole thing about being emotional, is that if there's actual trust and respect in the relationship with an emotional being, then there's never an issue with waiting. That was one of the more profound things that I learned from Ra, was that there's the greatest level of intimacy and respect is found with an emotional being, and waiting for the emotional being's timing, because there's an amount of respect there that you don't get in any other type of relationship. And so and then, of course, for me, is so I operate off respect. So it's naturally something that's very important for me. But to watch that be part of my process, and then part of the process of those that are in my life that I love, for better or for worse, it changes the way that other dynamics work. Like, it changes the way that relationships with non-emotionals are, because you start to gauge things based off that respect for your emotional system, and you can see that somebody that's emotional, for instance, has a higher level of respect for your emotional system. It's like, oh,
This is
this is the way that it's
This
supposed
is
to
right. Yeah, exactly.
be the other way, right? That really changes things. And then at the same time, like, there's non-emotionals in my life that show the same level of respect as emotionals in my life. But it takes a certain level of correctness and for a non-emotional to truly respect the emotional system. So I think that it's a really interesting qualifier for me. Like, in my experience, it's a really interesting qualifier for that to be a fundamental piece of respect. A fundamental piece of it's a marker for how much intimacy is actually going to be in this relationship. Because, I think that's what it ultimately, like, that's one of the largest things that it determines, is how much intimacy can be in this relationship.
Yeah, that's really well worded, and I think that very much sums up how I experienced that as well. Yeah, because without that level of respect and honoring my correctness, then it's like, Yeah, you can only go so far when someone's not doing that, you know?
Yeah, there's only so much. There's only so much at a personality level, at a mental level that you can go into with somebody, and then that's compounded with your authority, and emotional authority is
Doozy.
emotional authority is it's rather ruthless in what it's going to accept. And it's, if we look at other authorities base things very much off the moment, very much base things off the moment. I mean, with the exception of mental projectors, I mean, they've got a process authority, but everybody else, it's very much kind of based in that moment. And it's not based in history either. It's a splenic response, and like they have that splenic response, and somebody can be correct for them, and 15 minutes later not be correct for them. But if you're emotional, the decision is made based off of how much history you have with that person, how much your experiences, how all of that relates. So it's like this whole, if you, when you're emotional, there's case files for everybody in your
There is, yeah.
case files, and so the decision making process is just it's so deep.
It's so deep. It really is. And it's interesting because it's like we never really reached that like 100% like absolute clarity. However, there is like a resoluteness about it, like once you do reach clarity. Do you experience that as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've struggled to try to. Well, I guess I haven't ever actually put it into words before, but to try to make sense of it in my mind, because it feels kind of conflicting that we never reach full clarity, but then once we do come to a decision, it's like that's it, at least for that moment in time, like factors can come along and change things at any given time. But yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, clarity is, it's not 100%, but at the same time, it's not 100% because it can't be 100% for the mind.
Yeah.
I'd like the certainty, but the solar plexus is gonna have, it's okay, it's time to go. Okay, this is.
Yeah. And the body just does, and that's just it.
That's, yeah, and that's a wrap. And it's, I think one of the more important lessons that I've learned is to see how I am emotionally about, the other or a place or, about whatever. Anything that's important in my life, but of course our strategy is mainly reserved for who you're going to enter into a relationship with, whether that, no matter what the dynamic is, if you're invited to not moving itself, but if you're invited to move in with somebody, if you are invited into work, not necessarily what business you want to do, because you can do that whenever you want. Our strategy is reserved for like a few different type of situations, right?
Yeah.
It's not for everything. Like we don't need to be, you don't need to be invited to fucking speak. You don't need to be invited to start a business. You don't need to be invited to move. It's the moment that it's involved with somebody else, right? And something that's been really instrumental for me is to see where I am emotionally on those decisions, depending on where I'm at in my wave. Like I know who I can talk to if I'm in a low, in the sense of I would like to, or I would be open to. and who I wouldn't. And that's always really interesting to me that when you're not in a low, there's people in my life that great, I could engage with them and talk to them. I have a bond with them. But when I go into a low, that becomes that much smaller
Yeah, it really narrows down.
of confidence. And even to the level of not even engaging, but just even the level of just thought, like just awareness. Like when I go into a low, so many people will just immediately be out of my awareness because they're not that integral in.
They're just not available at that in that space.
Exactly. It's, and I know that part of it for me is fourth line things, just in the sense of, confident or not, and the levels of intimacy as a fourth line and how that functions, but still just overall as an emotional being, it's when you're in a low, it's the beings that if they went to engage with you, you could still engage with them when you're in a low. Like that's the difference.
Absolutely.
That's very much the large distinction, I think, of one kind of connection and the other.
I agree with that and deeply relate to that. And I had never really intellectualized it to that degree, but that the thing that you were saying about how they just kind of escape your awareness, like there's only really like a select few people that will remain in my awareness when I'm like really in a low, and those are the people that I know, like they're my people, you know what I mean? Like through thick and thin.
Yeah, that's been something that's very, it's been really useful for me. And it overall, it's a large piece of the decision-making process. Even when you go to engage with, and when you come out of that, and engage, you have a map, so to speak, as to, this is somebody is very solid for my emotional system, because at that point, that's what it's coming down to, is if there's continuity with your emotional system. Like, is there continuity in your high and in your low? For me, it's, there's a continuity in my melancholy and my low and my high, and that reveals a lot about the level of intimacy that the emotional system has, because that's also something that I don't think a lot of people realize or understand is how much, like, the emotional system itself is what's establishing intimacy
Yeah,
beyond.
it's calling the shots for sure. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I see no choice play out in this quite like pretty heavy, you know. It's like it decides, not me.
Not in charge of my life.
Yeah, no, not at all. My solar plexus is for sure. Yeah, and also like the people who can be in my what well, I can be in their presence when I'm in a low and like really fucking deep in my disappointment, and them not take it personally. And we've talked about this before. I'm not sure if it was on the other podcast or in the panel, but like that's like a really fucking important thing to me when it comes to intimacy, because sometimes I'm just feeling what I'm feeling and it has absolutely nothing to do with you or anyone else, you know? And to be able to like be in my presence to where I'm not feeling like I'm having to curb myself or manage you. Not that I would anyway, but like, you know, that subtle pressure that kind of can creep in. And you just like allow me to be and just know like it's not about me. She'll come back whenever the time.
I do. Yeah, very much We've been in that before, and I don't take it personally or anything like that. That my main thing is just always, well, you know me, I'm Mr. Practical. I'm just always trying to find a resolution to the best of my ability. Not that I can change what's going on with your emotional system, but definitely there's ways that I can make you feel more comfortable.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's definitely a large piece. Is It's like that's the next level. It's like who's in your awareness when you're on a low, and then it's like who can you be in aura with when you're on a low? Not only who can you be in aura with, but who do you want to be in
Who
aura
do
with?
you want to be? Which are also two different
So another distinction,
different
yeah.
categories.
Another distinction, like who you want to be in a low with, is huge. And yeah, for me, it's always with you. It's just about being in the most comfortable experience for you that I can create.
Which does help quite a lot.
It's not a seeking to change the emotional system or anything like that. But with you being experiential, it's doing my best to create the most comfortable situation for you to feel what you're feeling. That awareness is something that's, gosh, how much a lack of awareness in something like that can just obliterate a relationship. It's like either that's something that can is going to totally nurture a relationship with an emotional being, or is gonna everything is gonna all go downhill. Me being another emotional projector, I'm aware of that, so.
What do you feel is most supportive for you when you're feeling really the deep melancholy or moodiness?
For me, so much of emoting, I mean, emoting is emotionally acoustic, and so more, and it's funny in that way, like that there's it's something that could be seen as so like minuscule and so simple, and at the same time, because I'm emotionally acoustic, I can pick up intent behind words. I can pick up a lot of frequency because I am emotionally acoustic. And so things, for instance, something very, very simple. When I was going to voice message you the other day, and said, "Take your time. I love you." And my emotional system was just kind of like, it just like totally like it just got calmer, got a look got because I was really, really moody, and it's very difficult when I'm really moody because I don't. It's not that I'm concerned about how I'm going to be received or anything like that. It's how I want to show up and what I want to put out. It's fluctuating so much when I'm moody. You've seen it. I'll go from feeling great to just all of a sudden I'm like in this flat melancholy and kind of nothing matters, but I'm trying to maintain. It's something as simple as I love you. Words are very, very calming to my emotional system when I'm in I would say a darker place, because that's emoting. It very much does go to a darker place. It does go to an abyss. It's not. It can be very painful, but when kind of the remedy for that is the recognition of the emotional spirit of emoting, and if when that is recognized and it's acknowledged, that I'm going through it or that I'm in it, then it takes me out of a kind of this want to isolate myself almost, with withdraw, because that's, for me, that was something that I did when I was younger. When I was really young, ever since I could remember, I always knew that if I walked into a room, I would change the room. I knew this when I was young. I mean, I remember being like 5 years old, you know, and so I knew that if I was ever sad, that it was not to, wasn't good to be around people. And you know, it's funny because you don't know about your electromagnetic field. You don't know about your aura or anything, but as a kid, having the awareness and just sensing and watching, observing how that could affect things, I very much would withdraw. And even now, I mean, I don't let my emotional state stop my life, but I'm definitely aware of how my aura can affect a whole environment. And so when I can feel the recognition and I can feel the acceptance and I can feel the love for me, and not just for me, but also, you know, my life force, my emotional channel, when there's an actual love and appreciation that's there, it very much calms my emotional system, calms my nervous system, and makes it a lot easier for me to move through all of the emotions that I'm feeling. And I'm always feeling an extreme of emotions, but, you know, to the high end of the spectrum or the low end of the spectrum. And if I'm not there, then I'm in a melancholic state that is just, it's very flat, and it's what most people would consider to be depression, in fact. But for me, that's just my natural state, right? And when all of that is recognized, the quality of my life is immensely different. So I would say, you know, there's the recognition of it, and not just the recognition of it, but the verbal acknowledgement of it. Recognition of it, because I can, you know, I can have somebody in my life and I can know that they recognize it, but as somebody that's emotionally acoustic, if that's not verbalized to me,
It's almost like it doesn't like impact your nervous system, your body. It needs that kind of vibration.
I would say that's one of the largest pieces, because it's not even, of course there are, you know, ways to add on to that. Like, of course, physical touch also is going to add on to that. Of course, like, you know, in our presence is going to add on to that. But it's to me how much sincere recognition and words for my emotional state can do.
I've seen that and experienced that with you.
Because, it gets fucking intense. It gets pretty intense for me sometimes. But I don't. I also think that my experience with you is that it's very easy for me to allow that to just be. There's almost I think as an emotional projector, there's almost, for lack of better words, there's almost a masking that happens. Projector, right? Not knowing how people are going to react to your emotional system, you know, and that can come in the form of, like what I was saying earlier, withdrawing. But also, you know, not speaking, or, you know, there's just, it's not like you're not being yourself, but You can, because we get so lost in the other person as a projector, we get lost in people. We can become overly concerned with how we're going to affect the other person and neglect our own emotional state. And something that I've experienced with you is that I don't, that's just not something that I worry about. It's not something I worry about with you.
I'm really glad to hear that. And same with you. But I do know very much what you're talking about. And I find that, I mean, when I'm like really in a low, I do tend to withdraw from a lot of people in my life. And part of that does have to do with the fact too that like the emotional processing is like so big and so much. And it takes so much energy to like really like interact with other people as well. And so it's like not only are you like penetrating them with your emotional energy, but you're also like taking in all of them, you know, and then like navigating the whole dynamic and stuff, which like that takes away from the ability to like really process what you need to process sometimes. And so sometimes I feel like I just make like a conscious choice to like
That's
shut
it.
out most of the world for a period of time so I can like really be with my process, and then I can come back and like show up the way that I actually want to with other people in a way that I actually have energy for and without negatively affecting them, you know?
Yeah, it takes an immense amount of energy. The emotional processing takes an immense amount of energy, and when you don't have a defined sacral motor, yeah, it's like, can't. You have two motors to process all those emotions. You know what I'm saying? That's what's going on. It can very much, yeah, you can. For me, I have days where I can't, where I can't work, where I have to sleep. Like, that's what I have to do is sleep to go through the process. And then, I can, it's funny because I can wake up and like, oh, and my mood is entirely different because I had to sleep. And process that, my mood is entirely different. But it can be, there definitely is those times that the retreat is needed. And I think it's equally, that's other, it's another that they qualify that's really important is the understanding of that. Like somebody not taking it personal when that does need to happen.
That's a really huge one for me.
Not taking it personal when that does need to happen, and respecting the timing of that.
Yeah, that's something that I still, I mean, I definitely don't pressure myself to like respond to people or like interact with people when I'm in those states, but something that I do notice, like my nervous system is still kind of like unwinding the, like, I guess kind of yeah, just like the conditioning around like you gotta get back to people, you know? And like people are like, oh, like how are you doing? I never heard from you. You didn't respond to my text or whatever. And it's like when I'm, how do I explain? When I'm not in an emotional process and I don't get back, like I don't really feel a lot of like anything around it, you know? I like just kind of trust my timing and stuff. But when I am in an emotional process and that happens, like I feel, I don't know exactly what it is, but I feel something in my nervous system around it that I've been just like really bringing awareness to recently. And like it's interesting.
Yeah, there's a pressure that's there. And so much of it is conditioning.
Completely.
It's conditioning, and I think that there's, I think when you're processing emotions and processing experiences and processing everything, that the mind is aware, like, oh, we're fucking in it right now.
Yeah, we're doing stuff.
We're in it. And then, communication comes along, and there's this piece of conditioning that all of a sudden there's like a lot of pressure. Like somebody goes to communicate with you, all of a sudden there's like a lot of pressure, and it's like, how do I go about this? Like, where do I go from here? And it's a learning process of learning how to communicate to the other, and also being okay with that, just being okay with what this.
Yeah, just fully accepting it. And yeah, and I found that like over the years I've really like cultivated like my friends, my people, like they are really accepting and understanding and all of that. It took a long time to get there and a lot of trial and error, let's say. But yeah, so it's like I don't even really have connections in my life where like that pressure is actually there. It's just like leftover conditioning that is like, following through.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, as you're an emotional authority, like a lot of the, yeah, the those pressures fall away because those relationships, those connections fall away as you're right. But there is the residual conditioning around, having, expectations to respond, all of those expectations. Even I know that for me, even with work, it's been a deconditioning process when it comes to like client reschedules, how often I need to reschedule. And I remember like the beginning of my process, like that just being a really insane thing to do. Like it was like, like I'm ready, I gotta reschedule my whole day. And then, as you start to learn the value of your emotional depth, and you receive recognition. You start to understand the value of what you do as a projector. You start to realize how important and valuable your attention is, and that giving that at the best time, at the right time for your emotional system, is always going to be the most beneficial. And so I think that as a projector, just recognizing that when you are in the emotional state, that you can give the most amount of presence and attention is always going to be the best for the other person too.
Absolutely. Yeah, and work relationships, personal relationships, all of it.
It's always, in my experience, it's always it always mirrors as well, like what your personal and business is always, it's gonna mirror. Like if your personal relationships are on point, business is gonna be on point. If they're not, then it's not going to, like, the two, you can't separate the two.
No, they're one and the same. Yeah. And I think that's like, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like that's like a deeply like I have generator friends who don't experience the same kind of thing, But as a projector, it's like they're always fucking parallel.
No, I mean, if you think about it mechanically, the generator has energy to output, and the generator is here to build. Ultimately, they're here to build, here to create.
When you're doing that.
We're We're here to guide, and to guide requires
relationship.
relationship, exactly. So,
yeah.
And it requires being at a correct frequency to be actually, you know, to really be effective. You're a projector or you're not. You're a projector or you're not self. It's, you know, there's not an in between. And it's, if our relationships are in shambles, usually that's a lot of times we're in a not self state.
Yeah. You
know, in there. Like it's a lot of times that means that we're in a not self state. Because when we're correct and we're in our authority, following our strategy, then the people that are always supposed to be there are going to be there.
Yeah.
Invitations, all of that's going to be there. Even if something, you know, even if something with a relationship, you know, ends or something like that, as long as you're correct, you've entered it into it correctly, you've exited it correctly, and
yeah.
you move on with life, and there's not you know, a massive amount of emotional damage there, for instance, because you entered correctly, you exited correctly, or you, and then of course you can, you, or you abdicated correctly, you broke and remade the bond correctly, you know, all of those things, the mechanics are correct, so it's not a problem. But if it's not done that, if it's not done the right way, and
oh boy,
yeah, that's not gonna, they're not gonna work. And that's, it's a critical part of being a projector, is understanding that you can't do it on your own. Like you,
no, it, you just can't.
The projector game, it doesn't work solo. It truly doesn't. It doesn't
no
work.
Matter how much you might want it to.
No matter, yeah. No matter what you want it to, no matter how much you want to push or it or anything, it does. It's never going to work solo. There's an inherent interdependence that is just built into every projector. I mean, what is a projector without people to guide?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's another large piece. I think as an emotional projector, it's like, make sure that your relationships are in order. If your relationships are in order, then everything can flow, and you can process, and you can have the right people in your life. I mean, it makes just the whole process is smoother.
Yeah, so true. This is so true.
That's a big one. That's one of the larger lessons that I've had to learn.
Oh gosh, me too. Me too.
If you're concentrated, like if you're as a projector, it's where you put your attention, right?
Yeah.
We'll talk about, you know, where your, you know, attention goes, energy flows, but truly as a projector, for the projector, you know, because it's not a closed repelling aura. It's not a Teflon aura. It's not a opening enveloping aura. It is a focused penetrating aura, and that's where it's going. And so you're either lost in the wrong people, or you're lost in the right people.
Mm-hmm.
It's gonna go one way or the other.
Yeah, yeah. Which I think is, gosh, yeah. I have some like projector friends that are newer to the experiment that are going through this right now, but I think that is such a pivotal experience for projectors when they really realize where they're allocating their resources incorrectly, you know, and like being surrounded by people that don't really recognize them or support them. It just makes like God, the world of difference in every single aspect of your life when you're really around people that are actually seeing you, recognizing you, like, you know, respecting you and your configuration and your authority and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it can just cause so much suffering, like such deep, deep, deep suffering and bitterness and pain and exhaustion.
Then you that's the trouble as a projector, is that you're going to try and see it for yourself, and that leads to one thing that leads to recognizing your own, you recognize your own pain, you recognize in that you're not going to recognize what's beneficial. That's
Yeah.
need somebody else to do that as a projector,
Exactly. I know. Yeah.
which it's a catch 22 because you have to also recognize that in somebody else to receive it. You can't just expect people to recognize you without doing any recognizing yourself. And so as a projector, if you go and you try to self-recognize and you're going through it, all you're going to see is what's wrong. You're only going to see what's wrong. You're also going to see it through a distorted lens because you're going to be seeing it through your not self.
Yeah, that is not a fun hall of mirrors, let me tell
It's a bad hall of mirrors.
you. Yeah.
And so it's really it's crucial to have the inventory of who's in your life because yeah, when you're putting your attention and your energy toward, and for me it's, I guess I have an advantage in being a fourth line in like that's just always a very visceral thing for me as a fourth line of I'm always investing in people. Everybody investment, like that's fourth line's function. And so it's like, oh no, this there's no the ROI is not here on this person. Like the ROI is not here. Yep, that's not gonna work. It's yes, it's just there's it's more at the forefront for me, but that
Yeah, this is a bit more messy over on this end.
yeah, okay.
Fine projection and yeah.
A little bit more. I mean, there's the advantage in being a fourth line, just in that, just naturally for every fourth line, even if they're not a projector, they have to watch the investment. But
Yeah.
as a projector, but what a trip when you're a projector that has a profile line of projection is also just also a trip.
Yeah.
That's and it's it functions differently whether it's a two or a five, but ultimately it also benefits. There's always
Yeah.
ultimately projection field is to any it's to the benefit. If you have a line of projection in your profile, it's to your benefit. It's not to your detriment. It's not something that's bad, but it is something that you have to learn to deal with. Like you're gonna have to learn to deal with it. And
Yeah.
it's
And I think that's the thing is like before you know how to deal with it, like it can cause a lot of suffering, and so it can definitely be perceived as really bad. But when you really like accept it and learn how to work with it and have the awareness that it's there operating constantly, then it does shift to something like it just, yeah, something entirely different.
And you can it shows up. I mean, it shows up so different for me when it's as a as it being my personality, the personality side. But I because it's my personality, it's something that I'm always aware of. Like it's always I'm always aware. Boom, I'm in a projection field. Like the moment that there's another piece of consciousness in front of me, projection field. So it's funny because before I knew my profile, before design, there was just always like this unease that I could get with people. Like there would always be this unease and I'd always be like, yeah, this person doesn't, they don't get it. They don't get me. Lo and behold, I and I find out that hardly anybody can actually even see me, like in a full sense, right? It's okay. That's to my benefit. The projection is to my benefit. But now being aware that that's always there, it's just it makes it simple because it's only a matter of is it a clear is the projection clear or is it distorted?
Distorted. Yeah.
is it negative or is it positive? And that's all that really matters, and that's going to determine whether or not, frankly, whether or not I'm going to have anything to do with that person or not.
I mean, that is certainly a determining factor for me too. And then there's also like, you know, like the like desire from the other to like get something from me too, you know, and so me having to kind of determine like, is that something I'm taking on or can take on or can fulfill or not?
Yeah.
It's not, it's, I mean, that's taken a lot of working with and learning, and obviously I'm still not perfect, but that's like helped me a lot in creating like harmony in my relationships and correctness in my relationships of all kinds.
Right. I mean, as for you, as a five, you have to determine whether or not you can fulfill that projection, right? It's not, yeah. My behavior always being, I'm as a 10.5, my behavior is always projected on to. I'm projected on to be a fifth line, basically. My behavior is, okay, Brayton needs to be the savior. He needs to be the general based, you know, that's my behavior is always projected on. And two, and that in my 10.5 is in exaltation and life force. I don't have to worry about getting burned to the stake. I really don't. I kind of have a little bit of a cheat code. And it's in exaltation. I don't really have to, it's always, I'm always going to succeed through the higher principles. But that doesn't mean that I don't get the same projection of, can Brayton be the savior? Can he be the general? Can he resolve, you know? Since it's different in that sense, I don't have to be as, I don't have to be as cautious in accepting, you know, projections. Somebody that's a five is, I mean, you can still get burned at the stake as a 10.5 in life force, but it's definitely not something that is at the, I don't have the same level of suspicion that you do, that you have to deal with, or the same level, you know, fives have to, the suspicion and the paranoia that's always going to be there when it comes to accepting or rejecting a projection, right? Like that's always going to be there. There's always the suspicion. There's always a little bit of paranoia there. And you have to be really careful in what you accept as a fifth line. Like I always tell fifth lines, like you're not here to be everybody's friend. You know, like you're not, like you gotta, I like when Raw would says fives are nasty. Like you have to be nasty if you're a five. You can't, you know, afford to like have everybody think that you're their friend, because then you're gonna get burned. Like you know, everybody's to fulfill things, you know. It's easy, I have it easy in the sense that everybody wants me to be their genius, they want me to be their second line, and I can just say fuck off, I'm in the Hermit Tower, leave me alone. You know, it's not like that for you.
No,
like that. I can just, you know, I kind of just like throw my little cloak on and I run, you know, I can kind of run away, but not necessarily like that for you as a five.
Yeah, and I'm definitely like learning to be more ruthless, I guess, in that sense. Because you know, I really like, I not that I want to be everybody's friend, but I really like see like the beauty in everyone, you know. And so there is that desire to like have connection with people. But yeah, like over the past little while, I've been really doing my best to like strengthen my discernment and like you know, like who actually comes close to me versus like who can kind of just like witness me from afar in a way, you know.
Yeah,
and sometimes it's not even really, I mean, sometimes it's like the, my emotional system just like decides for me pretty quickly. Sometimes it takes a while, but it's not always like logical, you know. Most of the time it's not even logical at all. But it just, it is what it is. And so I'm like definitely learning how to just like trust that. Like even though my mind thinks that this person would be a great friend or a great person to have in my life, if something's telling me no, then it's just no, and it's not personal.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, it's not going to be. There's nothing, a logical stream in
Yeah.
the, it's all experiential. And so it's, yeah, it's something that's really, it's really interesting having a line of projection, because there's, it's, the five is the extension of the two, like their harmonies. And so there, it's funny to see the how those aspects show up. Like you said it, that some people can be close to you, some people can witness you from afar. For me, as a 2-4, I'm open or I'm closed. Like I'm, either I'm open to you or I'm not open to you. There's not a, you're either in my barrier or you're not in my barrier. And it's a frequency. It's not a mental decision that a second line makes over whether or not you're in their barrier. It's either just like, it,
Just
it's usually, oh shit, you're in my barrier.
it. How'd you get here?
Oh, you're in my barrier. Okay. Because it's just, it's always up. And then sometimes people get there at the right frequency and they can slip through. But yeah, it's interesting to see how both lines of projection, they're different, but there's, they just have different mechanisms for dealing with things, basically. I mean, they're both lines of projection. It's not, it's, what did Ross say, is that they said that the only difference between the 2 and the 5 is the 5 can seduce the sheep, and the 2 knows when to be around the sheep because it listens to the call. It's like saying there's not very much of a different, I mean, very different, but at the same time, both lines of projection.
Yeah.
There's either way, everybody's still projecting on us to get what they want, and for us to be what they want us to be. But the way that we deal with it is different, and the way that we benefit from it is also different. But it's very much something that is to, it's to my benefit, I've found. Like I don't, anytime that I'm talking to somebody that has a line of projection, like it's pretty apparent to me, like, we really benefit from this. Like this is something that's actually a massive advantage for us.
That's something that I've been more recently like really recognizing, like recognizing the benefit of it, 'cause for a long time it really did feel like a disadvantage in the sense that like no one actually sees me, or, no one actually knows who I really am, and no one even really cares. But like some people do, and they do their best to see you, and some people like really like have the awareness that there is a projection, regardless of if they want there to be or not. But like ultimately, yeah, like that the projection really does like serve us pretty significantly. And the other as well, Yeah, it's mutually beneficial.
No, totally. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it functions so different. It's always a really, it's always an interesting conversation.
Yeah, that's trippy.
Mean, until somebody's aware that it's not, they don't see it as a benefit or understand it as a benefit. There's it becomes a victim complex thing for them.
Yeah, which I understand. Like it can feel really painful to feel like no one actually sees you, especially if you're like still, or if you're in a place where like that feels like being seen and understood feels like really vital and important to you, which is something that I've also deconditioned, is like I don't need to be understood by everyone. Obviously, I have some collective, like there are things that need to be understood, but like me as a person, as an individual, like I don't need to explain myself. I don't need to be understood by people. And it's okay if people misunderstand me. And once I really like leaned into that and got comfortable with that, like the projection field didn't seem so sad or scary anymore.
It's definitely, You're able to deal with it in a different way. I think for me, like with it being conscious of my personality, I think the difficult part is definitely the learning process in relationship, in the sense of like being in truth and confrontation and just hearing, watching, seeing,
Yeah.
or just sort of projection. And then I'm just, I'm an emoting projector, and I'm just, well, we're going to see how you like the provocation for that. It's like being like consciously aware that it's my personality. It just like watching things be so far off base because the projection is distorted, it's, I think that's the hardest, one of the hardest pieces of learning is the process of learning, like, okay, we don't, all right, Brayton, we do not accept this in relationship. We do not accept this
Yeah.
in life. That was something that I would say definitely over the past year has been very much highlighted in my process. I told myself that I told myself that I was not going to accept any negative or distorted projection in relationships in my life. Said that if that happens, then that is cut until it's not. Whatever that relationship dynamic is, it is paused. It is over until that person sorts out their
Right.
awareness, because
Yeah.
projection is always determined by the level of awareness of the person that's projecting. It's ultimately has to do with them. So it's like, until that's sorted out, I don't want it in my life, essentially. I don't want that connection in my life, and unless there's clear, projection.
Yeah, and like really there's nothing that you can do to help sort that out either. So it's like, yeah, that's been kind of my stance too, because there's if there's a distorted projection of you, there's nothing you can do. It's just like the conversation over, basically. There's nowhere to go.
Let's talk about it so you can project more. It's like,
Yeah, exactly.
so we can continue to the distortion.
Let's just dig this hole a bit deeper, shall we?
Oh, exactly. No, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and like really that's how like in the past when I would try to like defend myself or show objective evidence to the contrary or like whatever it is, being like, "Hey, like what the fuck just flipped?" Because it's like a switch and then all of a sudden they see you as a completely different person. And it totally contradicts like your whole entire history with them, which can be really upsetting and disorienting and all the things. And so without the awareness that that's what's happening, you can like go into like survival strategies essentially. But that just makes things worse. So it's like
Really?
Disengaging I've found is like the best thing, offering like time and space for reflection if it's going to happen, and if it's not going to happen, then that's fine too. But the time and space just stays,
Especially when you're it's interesting being, when you're an emotional projector, because the emotional system needs truth and confrontation. The emotional system has no truth without confrontation. There is not. It was something that I learned this from Barbara Ditlow. Barbara Ditlow told me that I had to be in aura for truth and confrontation. She said that
Definitely.
non-emotionals are not actually having truth and confrontation if they're not in your emotional aura, and I was like, whoa, shit. Which kind of like that, because Barbara's not emotional, so I was like, whoa.
Yeah, wow.
And it wasn't just, the projector, it's you don't think about your own life and your own relationships until somebody else sees and sees those things. And so that really hit me, because she had explained to me like that she'd gone through this whole process of like learning how to breathe and regulate her nervous system for like her relationships with people that are emotional. And so the importance of the truth and confrontation, and the truth and confrontation being in aura. And when we say truth and confrontation, it's not the values of the words doesn't mean it's going to be something like intense, right? It's
It's
just
just
coming together and talking about what needs to be talked about. That's all it
just
is.
like yeah, really getting to the root of like what is,
But when your profile has a line of projection in there, you can't necessarily have that truth and confrontation as quickly, because there's the distortion that's there. It's not going to go well. Like it's not going to go. There is a disengagement for me. It's just, I'm not going to have the conversation. I'm not going to have the conversation out of aura. Like it's a no. Like I'm not going to have certain conversations out of aura, because there's not actual truth there without the contact, and there is the benefit as an emotional being is getting the time and the space, right, to go through the process. And because sometimes an emotional projector, like sometimes you'd be real, real angry about something, like really, really angry about something, so that time and that distance does help.
Oh, for sure.
I think kind of when I'm the most angry is negative projection. Distorted projection is like one of the times that I get the most angry, because it is like, okay, so what you see now is an entirely different person from however, you know what I mean? From last year, the year before. What you're saying to me, based off how unaware, how the lack of awareness of how you're seeing me, is that I'm an entirely different person from the person that you said that you knew, a month ago or whatever, right?
Yeah, that's what makes me the most angry too. Like I think the times that I've been like the most intensely angry, like it is around that, not even the situation that like elicited their negative project or whatever it is, it's like very much like how like how do you see me as a completely different person, completely opposite of all the things that like we've really established together. But
For me, that's really where I, in any sort of connection, that's where I can get really, really angry, is negative projection. Like that's the there's so many things that can happen in connection with somebody that I can get past, I can understand, I can, but distorted, seeing me through a distorted lens is, it can be a very hard signpost for me to want to move past, because that means that there's a lack of awareness that's there, and relationships are all about awareness. That's the whole purpose of relationships, is awareness. It's like, if we're not gaining awareness together, then, and especially
What are we doing?
as a projector, you're here to serve awareness. So it's like, if we're not gaining awareness together, then what are we doing here?
Yeah, and I was gonna say that the distorted projections can so often feel like such a betrayal too. And also I have in my own awareness that like the other person is experiencing their own form of betrayal because they're, obviously seeing you, me, whoever they're projecting about, like as a completely different person than who they thought that, us to be. But yeah, it's really painful. and really hard to kind of like come back into trust and relating in that way.
Totally,
Yeah.
totally. Very, and for me, it's a fourth line. Oh man,
The kindness, meanness.
it's like yeah, also just the trust and the and loyalty that fourth lines operate off of. It's like once that, it's like that's a quick way to erode the foundation.
Yeah. Mean, and it is possible, at least in my experience, like it is possible to come back to trust and safety in the relationship for sure. Yeah, it just takes awareness, acknowledgement, time, you know.
I think there's just there when anybody's dealing with a anybody's in connection in relationship with somebody that has a line of projection, the way to avoid the pitfall is to be aware that there's the projection. If you don't have a 2 or a 5 in your profile and the other person does, be aware that there's always a projection either on their body or on their personality. You know, one or the other, depending on the profile, or it could be on both if it's a 2-5 or a 5-2. You know, that doesn't mean that there's any more projection. It's just be aware that that's there.
Yeah.
Aware that that's there, then you're not going to be so sure about your the conclusions of the mind, because that's
Yeah.
also which is the conclusions of the mind,
Exactly.
and a lot can be resolved before going through those pitfalls if somebody is in connection with somebody that's a 2 or a 5 and they have the conscious awareness that okay, at the moment that I'm engaging with this person, I'm projecting onto them. Then can ask yourself the question, then somebody can ask themselves the question, okay, but what's my stuff, you know, like
Yeah.
what's my stuff and what's actually going on, and that avoids so much when it comes to somebody with a line of projection. And it's, you know, it's something that everybody it's important for anybody no matter what their type is, but particularly the thing is for the projector is that the moment that there's a negative projection, that means that there's not recognition. So, and relationships for projectors are based off recognition. Without recognition, there cannot be a relationship. So that's where it's so different for the projector as opposed to a different type. If you're another type and you're a 2 or a 5, it's got its own flavor. I'm not saying it's not important, but there's not a, I mean, this is like a, you know, it's like a game over situation for a projector. It
Yeah.
is over situation in if a projector decides to hardline and really decides to hardline their recognition, and they're a 2 or a 5 and they receive a negative projection, I mean, that could be it. And so that's why it's something, I think that's why I'm highlighting it, because it's a lot more visceral when your relationships rely on recognition.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I've found being in those particular experiences, there's just like a, well, there's just nowhere to go. It's like, well, what the fuck is the point of being here? Like, there's no point in being here because you're not relating to me, you're not seeing me. So like I'm just going to remove myself because there's nothing here for me, there's nothing here for you in that case either, you know.
I really like that you highlighted how there's like nowhere to go, because it
Yeah.
found that I guess at a body level, like my fourth line body has started to make that more apparent for me, because so much in the past I would try to resolve things
Yeah.
Motivation, probability view. I'm all about what's necessary and what's practical. And I'm Mr. Practical. I'm always, you know me, I'm always trying to fix, solve, condition, do whatever to make things work, right? That's what I'm designed to do, right? Make things work, resolve things, avoid the pitfalls. And so often earlier in my process, that would be like my go-to thing. And now my fourth line body's like, yeah, actually, no, we're actually not. Because that's actually not necessary. And I'm like, whoa, oh, it's actually not necessary because we're just going to go down a okay. So I'm a lot better off putting my attention and my energy and my focus penetrating awareness somewhere else. Oh, okay. And it's funny. This is like a realization within the past year. I mean, this is not like I haven't had this figured out for a long time. Like this is a very recent one. Right, it's interesting to watch.
Yeah, that's something that started to click in for me about, I think, like 2 years ago, and I was like, whoa, because I've also like had that need for like closure, resolution, like because it just doesn't make sense to me otherwise. Like, why are we gonna just leave things like open when we could just sit down, have a conversation, and clear things up, right? But that isn't always to your benefit or the other person's benefit. Like sometimes it's just a waste of time and energy. And it's like if the relationship isn't gonna like reconnect and like blossom into something new, then it's you're going down a rabbit hole for no reason just to get like lost there sometimes. Or learning to find a sense of peace and closure when there are things that may appear to be like open-ended has been like a big, massive like change for me.
That. Yeah, I like that a lot.
Yeah, and it oddly feels like really good. Like in my mind, I used to hate that so much, but yeah, it feels good because like you're being more discerning with your precious energy, and
Your awareness and
Yeah, awareness.
overall what you have, the fuel, everything, everything that we have to give. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, me too. It's good sense.
You were telling me that you've been working with Jameson on his emotional system.
Yeah, I have been. There's always been like a lot of space that I've created for him and his, his emotional process and things like that. And also like teaching him to honor mine as well, because that's also really important. And so we have like a really good flow when it comes to like if either one of us are feeling are low, we've really learned how to like ride that, not take it personally, like support each other and things like that. And that's really beautiful. But recently I've been teaching him how to make decisions based on his emotional authority. And he's like developed quite an interest in human design, actually. So like I've taught him a little bit about how he's a manifestor, like just like different parts of his design. And he's been consciously like practicing how to, and he asked me for it too, because like sometimes he'll get money for his birthday or a gift or whatever, and like little things, like he'll want to go and buy a toy, and then he would like buy the toy and be like, oh man, I should have saved my money for this other thing that I really wanted. And he was like, how do you know like what you really want to get? And so I use that as an opportunity to like teach him about how he's best designed to make choices. And so he's been like really like actively playing with that, which has been really cool to see. So If there's something that he wants to do or a place he wants to go or something he wants to buy or spend time on or something like that, like he'll now be like, okay, I know I really want that, but I'm gonna wait for like a couple of days, and if I still really want it, then I'll go get that. And sometimes he decides that he still does want it, and sometimes he decides like, oh no, this other thing is actually pulling my attention way more, and I've wanted this for, a longer amount of time. And so it's been like, yeah, just so beautiful to see like how easily he gets it, especially like in a culture where immediacy is so prominent, and especially with kids, where they have like pretty low impulse control.
Right.
Just really seeing him work with that has been really, really cool. And also informing him of like the benefits that that's going to have in the long run of him like really learning how to discern and tune into his, emotional decision making. And yeah, so it's been really fun.
It's massive as a as a manifester, especially it's for him to learn to wait. I mean, he's a manifester, he can initiate whenever he wants, of course, but the ones that are gonna be the least amount of resistance are gonna be the ones he waits his wave on, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
That's everything about the manifester is about removing resistance, because there's always everything about being a manifester is that you're always going to encounter resistance. And so, learning at a so beneficial to learn at a young age as a manifester how to remove that resistance. And there's going to be a lot. There's a lot when you're emotional. And I mean, also, there's what there's not. Such a good scenario to have a emotional projector parent, because it's the only thing that comes close to being an emotional manifester is an emotional projector. It's the only type of configuration that an emotional manifester can relate to, in fact. So the awareness that you're able to give him is awareness that he wouldn't be able to get anywhere else.
Yeah, and it's been really cool with, a lot of the things that I practice and a lot of the things that I want to teach him and guide him in. Like the bigger things I do, I try to like drop little like breadcrumbs for him to initiate and invite me into. And he knows that I do that too. Like I'm very open about that too. So that's also really cool. But yeah, so he'll ask me when he starts to develop interest in something, he'll ask me to teach him something. And that's how it was with this. So it's just so cool to like watch our designs kind of play out and to watch him like really embrace who he is from even like a more like intellectual understanding, like him understanding that he's a manifestor and how that works and what that means, and the emotional authority. And even like when he's in the lows of his emotional process, sometimes we have days where like we're both in it. And it's like we are able to like both be in it together and like remind each other that this isn't going to last forever and kind of like laugh about it and like find like little moments of like joy and connection in it and stuff. But yeah, he does really well at like waiting it out and understanding, and also knowing that like the things that come to him in that space aren't the truth. They're just that space talking. And the same with like the really high highs. Like that's the one that I've been kind of drawing more attention, or like trying to help him draw more attention to, because like when he's in a high, like he wants to fucking initiate all the things, It's like, and he's a kid, so like the stakes are pretty low, but Yeah, just really teaching him to like be aware that like everything sounds really good when you're in a high, but it isn't gonna like stand the test of time always. Yeah.
Everything's great when you're on a high.
It's so good. And like really being able to like lean into the enjoyment of that, but not expect that to like,
Continue.
yeah.
It's huge. It's huge, especially as, he's somebody that can initiate, and so learning that at a young age is massive for the. I mean, especially he's an eight centers defined manifester. I mean, there's a lot going on,
He sure does.
lot that's going on, and will save him a lot of his like that saves him from his own like collective disappointment.
Yeah, exactly. Like I think back to when, gosh, until I found human design, just all of the impulsive decisions I made that I like, what the fuck, like would never have made if I had just kind of waited it out a little bit, but like really not understanding at all like how I was to make decisions. I'm just doing it very much from a mental standpoint or from a really high,
It's when it's such a massive difference for children in their life if they know how to operate correctly. Because that's the thing that's so difficult is that there's always the conditioning around the sacral response, and we're responding to this now, or this needs to happen now. And because that conditioning is always there, it's like when you can give good conditioning to a kid of this is actually how you operate, then that can be the counterpoint to everything else that they are going to meet in the world. And especially one of the with manifestor kids, I work with a lot of parents of manifestors, and I've worked with more manifestor children than any other type, and probably because I'm an emotional projector, and it's the understanding of their authority, but also their understanding of people, understanding of people and manners, and the how much that can change the way that they move through the world. And that's something that's fascinating about Jameson. I mean, yes, he's a fourth line, but he's very interested in others.
Yes.
Very interested in others, and we all are who we are. But the manifestors that are very interested in other people, they tend to relieve a lot of resistance because they are interested in other people and trying to make, trying to break through that barrier, trying to break through, it's not like they can get beyond their closed aura, but
Yeah, of course.
they can open their aura and close it off. And when they want to understand other people, I mean, if you look at, I mean, James Baldwin was a manifester. Albert Camus was a manifester. Those are very, very impactful, philosophers and writers. And they were very concentrated on understanding other people. Always removes a lot of resistance. And I think it's really cool to watch that in Jameson at such a young age. And then get to see like how that is going, plays out in his life and how it's going to play out. Because as a manifester, when there's the want to understand other people, it makes it so it's easier to deal. They can deal with other people. It's like the manifester, angry the moment that they are asked a question. Oh, that's, it's very not self. You know, it's like, because the whole thing about the question asking for a manifester is, how am I going to deal with this? You know, mm-hmm. That's the question. The point is, how are you going to deal with it as somebody who is meant to initiate, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Point isn't, you know, so much the control of things. It's how are they going to deal with it? And when a manifester child learns how to deal with people in a deeper way than mechanically is natural for them, frankly.
Yeah. Yeah.
They remove so much resistance from their life.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, from, to, I mean, his whole life, because I found human design when he was like 8 months old or something like that. Thank freaking God. It's just helped so tremendously. But yeah, I mean, from always, like, he's been taught how to, you know, ask permission when that was appropriate. And now it's more so like in form of what he's doing and being aware of his impact on others, which we're still, you know, like that's probably going to be a forever exploration for him. But I do notice like his interest in other people also helps him be able to see his impact a bit more than other manifestors, because he's interested in how other people are being impacted. You know, he's not just kind of like going through life. He's also, yeah, bringing care and consideration to that.
Yeah, totally. And it's something that's, you know, I had two manifestor grandparents and a manifestor brother. I grew up around manifestors, you know. And all of which were very interested in people. My brother is very interested. My brother is as interested in other people as a projector, frankly. Like it's really fascinating for me to watch how interested in other people my brother is, like, and how much he's always studying. I mean, he's a clarion, so he does have a similar like 61, 62 brain system, right? Wants to understand the Maya, but it is fascinating to watch the relational difference in a manifestor that cares about understanding other people and one that they have no care in it. And I mean, you know, that's not like, there's, doesn't mean there's something wrong with that manifestor.
No. Yeah. There's no,
just like manners for the manifestor, right? If you're a manifestor and you have good manners, your life's going to be a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
But you have bad manners because you're always going to be, no, you know, they get noticed.
Yeah.
There's always like the, for the generator, there's always the, we don't really talk about this part, but there's always the inherent like threat that the generator feels genetically, right? Like people won't want to talk about this, but a manifestor walks into the room, all of a sudden the generators don't even necessarily, they don't even intellectualize this, but genetically, like at a genetic level, all of a sudden it's, oh shit, there's a manifestor here.
Yeah.
Like things could go really wrong because that's what the genes are saying from, you know, the past 200,000 years.
Yeah.
And so when the manifestor has good manners, it's like that changes the game for them because it sets everybody else, you know.
At ease, yeah.
Exactly. And so, yeah, it's not like, you know, it's not like they have to be a certain way or anything like that, but they're just like with any other type, there's always the things that remove resistance from us. I think it's really beneficial. It's just, I think he's so fortunate to have a projector parent. I mean, it doesn't get much better as a kid in this day and age than to have a correct projector parent.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
There's a lot that he gets to learn from you.
Yeah. And really vice versa too. But yeah, I feel really grateful that he's interested in learning from me. But a lot of that also is because I don't force anything on him. It's like I very much allow him to, like, I inform certain things, and then allow him to initiate based off of what he wants to be engaged in. And then I take that and I run with it as much as I can,
That's the way. Because what else is there? I've been asked that question. So I just, by parents, it's like, so I have to let them do what they want. I'm like, yeah, you have to let like the just the sheer terror of like I have to just let my kid do what they want. I'm like, yeah. But if you do, then that's gonna establish the trust and then they're, then things like come full circle. But so long as you're trying to control them to be they're really, really, I mean, that's a, you're always gonna meet resistance. You try to control them, you just you're that's not what they're here for. They're here to operate on their own. They're here to be lone wolves, really. They're here to be independent operators. And so it's like that just creates the resistance. It's I always think it's something that's kind of funny is to like let them think that it's their idea sometimes when it's not like necessarily their, like as long as they think like their idea and they can and it's correct for them, they can initiate it, like things go so smooth.
So smooth. And I do that with him all the time. And he also knows that I do that with him all the time because I tell him, and he's like, sometimes he'll, like, he's aware that that happens. And sometimes he'll, like, catch it in a moment and he'll be like, oh, whoa, you just did that thing. And let me, like, initiate him. Like, yeah, which is really cute. But what you were saying with trust is like, I hear so often from people that Jameson's like so polite and so well-mannered and so behaved. And I have like my own kind of little triggers around when someone calls a kid behaved, but that aside, like I don't do any kind of course of parenting or discipline or anything like that. Like I just inform him basically and give him like my trust and boundaries, and like we definitely have boundaries, but we don't really do rules. It's just like we're gonna communicate, we're gonna be honest with each other, and here are some things, here are the boundaries because of my own self, like protection or care or for our safety or hygiene or whatever it is. And outside of that, just like keep me in the loop of what's going on. And that really has developed like such deep trust between us where it's like, he feels respected, and so therefore he shows me respect. It's like, it gets mirrored that way. It's a back and forth for sure. And I think that if I were to, maybe even if I didn't find human design or didn't grow up the way that I did, and I tried to like control or coerce or regulate the way that, or manage the way that he behaves or what he does and things like that, I don't think that we would have the foundation that we have, where he just like, really respects me because I show him respect,
And it's a lot. There's the emotional projector, emotional manifestor relationship, and the understanding. Because there's you try to control an emotional projector child, it's not going to go. It's going to go about as bad as trying to control an emotional manifestor child. I mean, it's very, very similar. It's going to go and. So that like that understanding is massive, but I also think a piece about boys, young men, about men in as a whole, is that what actually affects their development. And I've seen this, and the thing that's fascinating is that I've seen this in children, and I've seen this in grown men. Like I've seen this in grown men. I've seen this in grown men on the battlefield. What actually affects boys and men is demonstration.
Demonstration, yeah. Oh, big time.
Demonstration more than anything. I grew up with my my main quote unquote father figure was my grandfather until I was 8. Parents were divorced. Dad lived in another state, so it was my grandfather. And my grandfather wasn't like he was always around. It wasn't He's a full-time school teacher. It wasn't like he was always around. It wasn't all of these conditioned ideas of what a parent needs to be for a boy, because a lot of people don't get that boys just need demonstration. So time that I would get with my grandfather, he would demonstrate, this is how you prune a tree. This is how you grow this. This is how you paint this. This is how you build this. They need the demonstration, which means that they need the example. They don't need the, and this isn't to say that somebody else does, but what boys don't need is coddling. What boys don't need is coercion. Like boys don't need those things. They need demonstration. If they have demonstration and they have an example that's set for them, they're going to operate off that. Like we naturally operate off of that. And so I think that's something that's important to highlight, is that you're by being yourself, by living life, creative role, setting an example for him to be himself.
Thank you. That's been one of my main objectives as a parent, is to really become as much myself as I can to show him that he can do the same thing and thrive in the world, and also really embracing it and accepting all of him. Because it's important. And that's really true for all humans. It's we learn by example, not by what's told to us or restrictions that are put on us. It's we emulate what our parents do, what our caregivers do, what our friends do. And so being able to be a positive example when you're such an important role in someone's life is so freaking essential.
Yeah, it's so much demonstration is really, it's important. I think there's such a huge benefit, a manifestor child, to have demonst you know to be able to experience demonstration, because a lot don't. It's, they experience control and coercion, and that's what causes problems, as opposed to the example being set and then them going with it. I didn't, the demonstration was what I experienced growing up, and that was like a massive benefit to me now in hindsight, now looking back at it, because I look back then, and I didn't, back then I was just always thought it was interesting that I wasn't there were it wasn't always like hands-on parenting. It wasn't always, it was always, my grandparents and my mom were setting an example for me, and they would teach me what I needed to be taught, and let me make, I would make my own decisions, and I would also suffer my own consequences and all of those things. And back then, I didn't realize how beneficial it was. And now being older, and having worked with many clients and worked with clients and their kids, and work with clients, regarding their kids, I can see, like, wow, I thought that I just not I thought it was just peculiar back then. I didn't realize that, yes, it's peculiar, but it also is very beneficial. Like, very beneficial.
Absolutely. I think one of the, well, I know one of the gifts that human design has given me as a parent too is really accepting, because there's so much conditioning on what a I would say, especially for mothers, what makes a good mother, right? It's you have to be perfect at a million different things. And there's a lot of things about motherhood, quote unquote motherhood, all of the homogenization that comes with that, that are just not naturally in my wheelhouse, It's I don't operate like a generator. But I have so much to offer Jameson. within like the confines of like confines is the wrong word, but like within the realm of like who I actually am. And so being able to first like accept that about myself and acknowledge that for myself, and then also being able to communicate that with Jameson is like, I'm not the person that's going to run around with you at the park all day long, chasing you around. You know, like that's just not me. We can have some like really intentional play. And also, like, I'm here to help guide you in like these really important ways, you know. And if you want a playmate, there's someone else, you know. Like, he gets really focused and intent, like presence from me, but yeah, really like acknowledging that I can't be everything for him and communicating that to him and holding boundaries has been really beneficial for me in the way that I get to enjoy motherhood and without like burning out from it or feeling any bitterness or resentment, and which is also a gift to him, right? But then him also like having the ability to develop like realistic expectations for me, and also develop the understanding that, you know, everyone's different and have like has like different you know, zones of genius, if you will. And I think that's been a gift for him too, because he is, since he sees me acknowledging like what I'm good at, what I'm not so good at, he also like has a deep like willingness and openness to doing that with himself. And I see him make those little audits, you know, and it's that's been really cool to see.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. It's something that is important to highlight how different it is to be a mother that's a projector. Like it's very different when you're not an energy type, and also when you're when specifically a projector, because a reflector has the cosmos as their life force, so a projector doesn't.
Yeah.
And you know, both non-energy types, but when you're a projector, it's different. And I, of course, work with a lot of projector mothers, and I see that there can be so much difficulty in setting the right level of boundaries and setting the right expectation, because there is so much pressure around what it is to be a mother. There's so much pressure and so much expectation at a macro level and at a micro level, you know, through, you know, family and through society and all the conditioning and everything like that. And it's a night and day difference when in a projector parent, but you know, for a projector mother, it's a night and day difference I see in their process. Because if you're not operating like a projector, then you know we suffer physically, mentally, emotionally. There's a deficit that's happening, and then there's also the expectations of the child aren't correct because they're not set correctly. And it's difficult because there's so much conditioning around it. It's something that has to be learned, right? Like it's something that really has to be learned, and it's a deep process that I think every projector mother has to go through. I mean, we're still very much the first generation of projectors, so it's not, you know what I mean? It's not like there's no handbook for this yet. It's been, you know, the handbook's been, so it's a whole process, and it changes the way that the child interacts with the world as well. As that's another example, you know, that, oh, my mom's different. Yeah, my mom's not, you know, my mom doesn't have the energy for that. Yeah, she doesn't do that. Yeah, it's not going to be, yeah, you know, driving everybody around, running around, doing, you know, all of the things that you got a sacral center, you know, you could do.
Yeah.
I think it's something that's a massive piece of differentiation for. First off, it sets an example for the child, but also it keeps you healthy. It keeps the projector mother healthy.
Yeah.
And has to happen because you can't be there for the other unless you're there for yourself first.
Yeah, exactly. And it keeps the relationship healthy because like I'm so excited to show up for Jameson the ways that I can, you know, in the ways that I do. And there's not, yeah, there's not that bitterness or burnout that I experience in our relationship because if I'm starting to like veer on the edge of that, I just communicate with him and we work it out and you know, it takes some time and space or whatever it is, and he understands that and honors that. And that's yeah, it's just like really, yeah, it's beautiful. But it's a whole different like paradigm of like what parenting is, you know.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, definitely. It's there's quite a bit of learning and exploration when it comes to living the projector life and then how everything else fits in relation to, like, I think if I think about myself, for instance, I'm like, okay, there are all of these things that traditionally would be expected. I don't have energy to physically do, which changes things in one very specific sense. It means that I have to be good with energy because I have to then, if I'm not going to physically do something, I have to utilize energy to have that thing done. It's like expectation of the man to, like, whatever it is, build the fucking terrace or the deck or whatever. It's like, if you're a projector, you pay somebody to do that. You know what I mean? Like, it's different. Like the move through the world in roles as projectors, it's different. The expectations and relationship are so different.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And like really learning to, or, you know, just like deconstructing any kind of like shame or sense of like insecurity that might come with that and just like really accepting it and working within that, you know, because it's like, yeah, we're not here to do everything. We're just not. No one is. So it's like, yeah, just really leaning into the things that we are here to do and outsourcing the rest.
I think it's huge for, so big for projector parents. There's a lot of homogenization and conditioning just as a whole you have to navigate. But when you're responsible for somebody else, there's an added pressure that's there. That it's not even just a societal pressure, but there's also a genetic imperative, right, to provide, to take care of. And how that looks is very different for the nine-centered being projector than it was for the seven-centered generator. You know what I mean? It's very
Oh
different.
yeah, very different.
I think there's a lot of there's a lot of work to be done in terms of how projectors can navigate parenting, because there's no, we're the first generation that's really setting the example for it. So it's new territory. It's new territory.
Yeah, it's something that I'm just like continually, you know, in discovery of and fascinated by because it's, yeah, it's just quite the experience, you know. And
Done.
the the examples of what parenting is or should be don't they just don't really like apply. And so it's just, figuring it out as you go.
Yeah, because I mean, only so much can apply when the majority of the measurements that we have are based off of energy types, rooted in 700 psychology.
Yeah, and really you can kind of like copy and paste that statement to like every life experience of a projector, It's
It's just it's important to recognize like all of it's like all of these aspects of your life are going to change, you know what I mean? Are
Yeah.
going to, not like you we get to enter strategy and authority and it like grays out this certain area of life and how you operate. Oh, it's everything. It's everything.
Everything changes. Yeah, from the big to the minuscule, everything.
How is Jameson's development in terms of initiating, like his comfort or discomfort in initiating? Has it changed?
Is he comfortable or uncomfortable with initiating?
More comfortable with initiating than he used to be, or?
Yeah, actually, yes. He's always been very comfortable with initiating because it's always been welcome and encouraged in his life. But where I really see that is like when it comes to friends. Yeah, like he. He's been kind of, he's the fourth line. He like shares and externalizes like all the things. So he shares that he like doesn't really like to do things unless he's the one who started it or is in charge, And he's like, not that I want to like tell people what to do or anything. I just want it to be my idea that they're doing, And so he's like embracing of that. And just like really like understanding like, oh, it's okay to like want to be the one to start things. And like that's actually like where I shine the most. And where I'm really noticing a lot is like he obviously initiates a lot, his follow through with like certain projects. And he has like a lot of different creative projects that he started, right? But like he doesn't always like want to finish it or carry it out. Like he likes to like get things started and then he'll be like, oh, can you do that for me? And he like likes to outsource it. And I'm like, that's how you're designed to be. So it's wonderful. But he's like, yeah, really starting to understand and embrace that rather than being like, oh man, I should have finished that. I never finished that. And it's like, well, that's okay. It's like your creative project, you've got to experience the act of creation to the level that you wanted to, and that's great. And when you're, have the people around that are willing to carry it out, then that'll be perfect, and maybe it'll get done then. And yeah, so he's like enjoying that.
That's great.
Yeah, which is cool to see him shift out of like, not that it was shame per se, but like maybe like a little level of like self-disappointment that he like wasn't finishing things to really just celebrating how he operates,
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah, it's that's something that I always find to be interesting when it comes to manifestor children is how they're navigating, and because there's a whole thing that they have to figure out socially, right?
Yeah.
There's this whole social dynamic they have to figure out. Jameson has an advantage by having a fourth line personality because their social skills fourth lines have other people don't have.
Yeah.
That's still there's a social dynamic for things to be correct for them. So when I talk to my brother, I very much like I'll inform him and I'm just like waiting for him to like he's going to initiate what he initiates and I'm going to inform him
Yeah.
But there's not another way to do it for it to be like, it can't be correct for him unless he initiates it, right? So it's
exactly,
yeah, there's a whole social dynamic that a manifestor has to learn for it to be correct for them. And it's always fascinating to watch at level of a child how that develops, like through their experiences, is so, it's beautiful. It's a really beautiful thing to see how they can develop that very naturally with, you know, with the right informing. Naturally, without going through the same pains that, you know, a manifestor has to decondition.
Absolutely. And as you were talking, I was thinking of this thing that he does when he's like wanting to decide what to do. He really wants to give me choice, you know, and he's like, okay, let's do something together. Do you want to do this, or do you want to do this, or this? And I know every single time, no matter what I choose, he's going to choose something different and initiate. And he knows it too. But it's like, he's like wanting to, like, you know, he really like puts in that effort to like give me a choice. And then I'll choose and he'd be like, okay, yeah, that's a really good choice. But I was thinking maybe you would have a lot more fun, you know. And so he like also like has like the words around it to try to, yeah, it's so funny. But yeah, I mean, when it comes down to it, it's like he only feels best when he initiates, and that's, yeah, that's just kind of how it goes here.
It's cute.
Yeah, it's so cute. And sometimes he'll initiate something that I'm not interested in or don't have the energy for, and you know, I communicate that and he's like, okay, well, I'll go and do this, and then he'll initiate something else that he knows that both of us might want to do. But yeah,
and that's equally important, because that's also part of being a manifestor is the initiation not going anywhere. That's also
yeah, exactly.
Oh yeah, that's not gonna work. That's and learning to deal with that in the, you know, in the true self way is important. It saves a life. You know what I mean? That's really good.
Yeah.
He's learning through, learning a lot through his initiating.
Yeah. Yeah. He really is. That's really cool.
It's great. It's very, it's not a, it's another, it's another, another book that is very important is the man is parenting the manifestors, because
yeah,
we're about to have a bunch of them here pretty soon. There's about to be as many manifestors on the planet as there is projectors here pretty soon. So we're gonna have a lot of energy types running around that can actually, you know, initiate things. Which means that we'll have more people in design that are going to be having manifestor children. The more that they're raised correctly, the easier it is on everybody, you know, the easier it is on them, and the easier it is on them. It's just such a different way of parenting. I mean, it's so different from parenting in any other type.
So different. Yeah, the like traditional parenting tactics, not that I was ever inclined to use them anyway, but they just don't work at all. They make everything worse.
They don't. When I work with parents and manifestors, I basically have them scratch out fucking almost everything that they've done so far. Child, I'm like, yep, okay, so we're gonna wipe the slate, you know, we're basically gonna wipe the slate clean.
Yeah,
now we're gonna start to introduce, you know, all of these things. And it's funny because no matter how afraid they are to do them, all of a sudden it works, because it's mechanics.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do about it, you know.
and then it works. But it's always, it's, I think it's important to I like that. We're able to cover some of parenting Jameson because it's important for people to hear. I know there's a lot of parents and manifestors that are in the thick of it because it's different. It's different, and it's one thing to hear or read source material without any demonstration, frankly, you know, but when you can listen to or watch, you know, you can experience that it can be done in a, you know, in a real life way that's closer to, you know, closer to home. I think that can make a very large difference for a lot of people. So glad that we could go over that. So Jameson's a fascinating manifester.
He really is so fascinating. And I mean, yeah, ultimately, you know, I think it can be scary to like do things that go so like against the norm, but it just makes everything so much more easeful for both the parent and the child. You know, like everyone's happier, there's so much less resistance, everyone's thriving so much more. It's definitely worth it.
Yeah, so it's we that's part of design is the discomfort, like the discomfort of deconditioning, the discomfort of, you know, de-homogenizing and differentiation. Like it's gonna come with discomfort.
It's worth it.
Yeah, that's what I said. Oh, hang on, you know, it's like hold on, hang on a little bit longer. Like it is worth it. I appreciate the experience as always. I appreciate the experience and the comfort that you bring to others and to my life. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate the experience so much too. I always enjoy talking with you and the level of depth and just, yeah, mutual understanding that we get to is so good. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. I'll have you on again soon.
Yay. I can't wait.
Thank you.